Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. It is now time to open up the mic. We want to welcome in a regular contributor to our show. That is Adam Grossman. He is the president and founder of Block 6 Analytics. Good evening, Adam. It's nice to have you back with us.
Great to be here.
Well, there's a number of things I want to dive into, but first and foremost, that's on my mind. Talk to me about the merger of Anheuser-Busch and Miller. I mean, $107 billion deal. that's got, I think, some sports organizations a little bit nervous. Tell us why.
Yeah, one of the things that people get nervous about from a sports perspective is when there's consolidation in an industry, it could mean less potential sponsors and a less potential need for advertising. What's really interesting is as this merger was being negotiated, Bud Light signed a six-year extension with the NFL for $1.2 billion. And the reason that they've done that, from our perspective, is that the NFL, especially through its new series of cans that have NFL logos on the cans, is that the NFL can provide a unique buying experience for Bud Light that can't exist in any other format or any other venue or through any other channel. And that's the focus of a recent piece that I wrote for Forbes, is the idea that sports organizations will continue to be successful in attracting sponsors if they can continue to communicate why they're adding value, both from a revenue perspective and a marketing perspective, to their corporate partners. So regardless of as consolidation occurs, there's always going to be a need for advertising and for communication. One only has to look at what's going on, with Coke and Pepsi, where both organizations really compete hard for advertising, for customers, and for sponsorship dollars.
So the clear losers of this merger, would you say that is the sports organizations?
Well, no, I think sports organizations, I think people, it's easy to say that they could be a loser because there's fewer. You might argue that Anheuser-Busch has less of a need to advertise, but Anheuser-Busch in the beer category in particular, when it comes to pouring rights, they're going to face competition both from larger companies, whether it's the Heinekens of the world, or from smaller microbrews that have increasingly got a foothold, especially in the United States and especially domestically. And one of the target demographics that Budweiser is looking at is 18 to 34-year-olds, particularly 18 to 34-year-old males, but also NFL has a very large female fan base as well. So the idea of creating unique opportunities to get customers who are consuming the brand in an environment that's really going to create positive brand associations and positive brand perception does help the teams. And if the teams can communicate how they're talking about value, then I think they ultimately can become winners because they can talk about how they can deal with new competitive threats.
Another big topic, DraftKings and FanDuel. I mean, there's some legal challenges there. What are they going to do to fight this?
Yeah, one of the things that the fantasy sports has been good at, and this is something that's not traditional for sports teams, is that fantasy sports actually has a federal lobby, a registered lobby, and at least it had it for a significant period of time, registered in D.C. to lobby for issues. And, you know, there is a carve-out in the Internet Gambling or the Internet Act that basically outlaws Internet gambling for fantasy sports sites. Now, the original reason for that was, you know, if you're talking about whether it's Yahoo or ESPN or CBS, you know, if you're hosting the traditional fantasy football, you know, they didn't want to necessarily be a legal issue with that and hosting the site when something like fantasy football or traditional fantasy football, baseball or basketball was occurring. Now, the daily fantasy sports sites have use that to their advantage to create the service offerings that they have. What they're really going to need to focus on is continuing, like you're saying, adding lawyers, adding lobbyists, really pursuing legislation. But I think it opens up a larger question, which is, you know, sports gambling in the United States, both legal sports gambling and then not legal sports gambling, is a huge amount of dollars, estimated to be billions or trillions of dollars potentially every year. Figuring out the right legal framework to have sports gambling and make it so it's not as kind of in the shadows as it's been in the past is something that's certainly top of mind for a lot of sports leagues. It's one of the big reasons that Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times saying now might be the time, or now is a good time, to think about legalizing sports gambling.
Okay, so the New York State Attorney General, they sent a letter to the company, to DraftKings, FanDuel, to stop accepting business within the state.
Yeah.
So we can anticipate this is going to be a snowball effect. We'll start seeing this widespread across the country. I mean, what's the forecast?
I think it's not going to be. I think there will be an effect, and this is not the first state to have done that. There have been other states. I think now there's at least six states that have these types of bans. I think it's because there's not a clear legal framework around these daily fantasy sports sites. And once there is, I think it will be something that can change and be something that will, you know, again, I think it's clearly that there's a huge traction, you know, millions of people play on these sites. I think both sites have at least 2 or 3 million players, if not into the 4 million or 5 million player range. To outlaw or ban something that has such a big following is going to be really hard on a nationwide basis. Although I do think a lot of states, particularly states that already have some form of legalized gambling, whether it's horse racing or casinos or other betting venues, or the lottery, they'll definitely look at this very carefully to make sure that it's, it's something that can be regulated, and it's something where if it can work to their advantage, where they can, again, make it legalized so they can tax it and it provides a new source of revenue stream for the government.
Adam, let's head to Columbia, Missouri. Just the protests, let's talk about that prompted change, all the racial tensions and the other issues, which as a result, the university president resigned and the chancellor departed his position. Just what was your reaction to how all this unfolded and the results?
Well, I was surprised at the speed of how this really escalated from basically a local and regional issue into the national conversation. And this is probably not surprising to anybody who listens to your show, but the idea of the athletic department really creating visibility and being central to the brand of a college or university in ways that pretty much nothing else is clearly on display here. And the fact that the football players decided to suspend any kind of football activities, and not only that, but the coaches supported them in what they were doing. And that seemed to spur, it's not a one-to-one, like they did this, therefore the president resigned. But clearly the situation escalated quickly after this became a national news story because of the football players and because of what the football players helped to accomplish. I was surprised at the speed. I was surprised at, potentially how successful this is, but how successful this was in terms of the protest group achieving one of their core aims. But I think it just reinforces the idea, like I said, that I have, that brands, football teams, athletic departments are central to the brand of the university. And if they're going to do, if they really want to institute change using athletics to potentially, agitate or institute for change, I mean, this is another good example of how that occurred.
Institute change, yes. The Missouri football team, the Tigers, certainly played a prominent role, and it really does illustrate just the power in sports, but also, Adam, I'm sure you'll agree, the power of social media as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, sports teams in particular have been very, very well aware both on the positive and negative side of the ability of social media. But the idea of social media, the interconnectivity of, people from across the country to really see, and even not just, what now would be called traditional social media, which is like Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, but the idea of Periscope and Meerkat, and the idea that you can take a video and live stream a video really quickly to see what's going on and see the protests and get involved and really have an impact. The idea of a message spreading as quickly as it does, it's not even a 24-hour news cycle now. It's a much shorter news cycle where things happen so quickly. And this story happened, from, again, becoming a regional issue to a national issue in a matter of minutes, if not hours. And that's something that, again, because of social media, because of technology, and because of the ability of new platforms to help people reach wide audiences and communicate, that's definitely something that is very impactful to sports organizations and something they're looking at very closely.
I also want to make mention, you are now, Block 6 Analytics is working with the Cleveland Browns, the Philadelphia 76ers, and Tribune Media Group. So how are you using technology to build those brands, to build those businesses?
One of the things that we talk about, and one of the things that's central to our company, and one of the things we're working with all of these brands with, is the importance of data. And the idea that data, there's a lot of data, and you were just talking before about social media, and one of the things that obviously is probably top of mind to some of your listeners is how much data is being created just from social media platforms in terms of your what you're posting, who you're posting, who you're talking to. But the idea is that sports organizations now have access to more data than ever before. And it's what our company really focuses on is how do you understand that data? How do you interpret the data? And how do you really communicate that data? Communicating quantitative concepts is the foundational challenge in the sports industry. And our company is focused on, particularly in the sponsorship arena, how do you take all of this data that's being created and how do you communicate that to your corporate sponsors so they can communicate it to their bosses, to their managers, to fans, to media? And the companies that will be successful, particularly in the sports industry and on the business side of the sports industry, is the companies that can look at data, examine data, and communicate data. And I know some of your audience is people who understand data. Either they play fantasy sports or they follow stats of their favorite players. And we want to, we're applying that kind of, and probably a lot of people who are fans of your show or also know about Moneyball, And the idea, the concepts of using data to create better decisions on who to sign as players. Mm-hmm. What our company does is, how do we use data to make better business decisions? In particular, how do we show sponsors how much value that they're getting from their sponsorship with teams using our proprietary models and our technology and our approach? And that's really how we've gained a lot of traction in the sports industry.
Adam, always a pleasure to have you on our show. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to connecting again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more straight ahead right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, @ERadioSports, and we will be right back.